Just behave yourselves and act like men.
Now you start using your head! That's not love! That's 3 feet above your ass!
People will come, Ray.
Alright, don't try to strike everybody out. Strikeouts are boring. Besides that, they're fascist.
We don't stink right now.
You play ball like a girl!
You're out of here!
There's no crying in baseball!
High fly ball into right field. She is gone!
This is West Coast Bias.
Dynamite drop in, Monty. That broadcast school has really paid off.
On a nice, crisp, hazy, foggy,
overcast.
July, overcast, July day, high above Franklin Street in San Francisco, California, I am Adam Nelson.
And I am Samuel Paul. And welcome back to a baseball podcast.
West Coast Bias.
West Coast Bias baseball podcast.
Has it been that long?
I think it has. Great. And thank you so much for being patient with us. We have had a heck of 3 months. Lots of changes going on. Few relocations, few work schedule changes, and we finally have some time to sit down and talk about baseball, and it feels good. It's been far too long, and I'm certainly happy to be here today on the precipice of the All-Star game.
It's over. We're back. This is it. Yeah. It's been we're not looking back. We're just looking forward now, and we got a lot of baseball to look forward to.
We do. We have a lot of really fun baseball to look forward to, I believe so, here, especially here on the West Coast.
That's right. Today, this day will be, by the time you hear this, it'll be the Home Run Derby, or the Home Run Derby will have just ended, hasn't started yet, and I don't want to spend too much time on that, but I got to hear your prediction. Let's see, maybe one of us will be right. But yeah, okay, but first of all, my prediction would have been, and still is, if he were actually in it, little Vladdy Jr. Where's Vladdy? Why isn't he in the Home Run Derby? I just assumed he was in it. And then when I saw the brackets a few days ago, I was shocked.
Yeah, I don't know what, perhaps he was offered and declined. I don't know. I did not hear his name being tossed around at all about
did I miss
possible,
something?
I don't know.
I don't understand it. I mean, there's no way he would have lost. I don't see how he could have lost.
He definitely seems to have one of those swings that's just sort of geared for
home runs. He flicks at the ball.
Yeah,
and it's 390.
Like McGuire used to.
Kind of.
I mean, it just flips him out. It's pretty amazing.
It's really strange. I don't get it. I don't understand why he's not in it. I guess I'm sure I missed something. But either way, it'll be done probably again by the time you hear this. Shohei Ohtani is favored. I don't know if that's... That to me doesn't make entirely perfect sense. All right. Hot take. I'm taking back to back. I'm taking the polar bear. I'm taking Pete Alonso. I think he's gonna do it again.
You know, I think you're right. I would say. I mean, he performed so Reed. Well, and
that's your guy
towards the new the new format from last year. He did that so well, and
2 years
he played
ago.
That game
yeah.
2 years ago,
right?
Yeah. Last year is a little bit of a blur. Yeah,
not a huge fan of the format.
It
doesn't reward guys having a big round like the Josh Hamilton year that everybody always thinks about. You know, like every round it gets scrubbed. So you know these guys are swinging as hard as they can. I in a year where injuries seem to be of paramount interest. 7-inning futures game, which doesn't make any sense to me either. 7-inning doubleheaders during the regular season, of course. Why are they making them? It's 2 minutes or 3 minutes. I don't know. It's a timed thing. You just got to swing for the fences. I get it, but it just seems it's all or nothing. And the guy who goes second, it's much easier for that guy.
Yeah, because he knows how many he actually needs to
right.
hit. There's just some sort of target. Yeah. There's flaws to the format for sure, but I'm not necessarily saying that I'm a fan or not. I probably don't like it much either. I'm just saying that Alonso last year played that game well enough to win. I think he'll be able to do it again.
Well, and also, the only reason why I'm not saying Ohtani, even the watch, I'm sure I'll probably be eating my words, but it's just because he has such a long swing. He has a very long swing, and he has a very violent swing. And it makes for incredible home runs. It makes for, you know, 110 plus off the bat. It makes for, you know, MLB leading home run leader, not to be redundant. But, you know, another thing is he doesn't take batting practice. He's famous for not taking batting practice. Really? And Home Run Derby is a glorified batting practice. So,
yeah.
I like Pete Alonso. He's a big dude with a short swing. He just runs into him. And he's like the first guy to like hit him all over the park. You know, usually in Home Run Derby, you just pull, right? Pull, just pull. Easy swing. Yeah. But he was hitting him fine 2 years ago.
Well, sure.
Most... And this is going to be Coors? Yeah. So I did my bracket on MLB, you know, you sign up or whatever.
Yeah.
And just based on the matchups, I had it, Alonso and Gallo.
Okay.
And then I just gave it to Pete because he had been there before. He might be in the same company as Griffey and Cespedes. But I just think, and he's not having that great of a year, so I think this actually might help him. But I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, I have no ultimately reason to disagree with you on your thoughts there. I admittedly have not paid as much attention to this particular aspect as you have. I did not fill out one of the brackets on MLB.
I don't know why. It's free.
Yeah. I think it just comes down to... And to time and management among all of the details that we come across life.
It takes 52 seconds to fill out.
Perhaps. But it's not anything that was on the forefront of my mind when I had time to do
it. No, and I know. And I specifically said I don't want to spend too much time on the Home Run Derby again, because by the time this episode gets out, it'll be old news. But I did want to look at, because, you know, as a fantasy player, I cringe when I hear my players in the Derby.
Hmm.
You know, it's just, it's an old thing. It's, you know, it's the same, it's the thing that Barry Bonds always talked about, right?
It's
going to mess up your timing, it's going to mess up your swing, and baseball is all about millimeters and microseconds, and,
you know, when
you have your dad pitching to you, or you know, even your hitting coach pitching to you.
A lot of that is very psychological, but there is something to it. You know, since half the game is 90% mental. just so everyone knows, who are the official participants in the Home Run Derby?
Well, I mean, I got to rattle them off the top of my head. We got Matt Olson.
Matt Olson?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, who, again, I think has a very, you know, he's the kind of guy that has like a very big swing. Like a very long swing, and right. I just don't really see him. I mean, he could be a dark horse. I think he could just run into a bunch and do well. But again, very long swing for him. You know, I don't know.
Tire out in the later rounds,
or just not perfect for the Derby, where you need, it's a time thing now.
Yeah,
Ohtani against Soto. I think that's the first bracket.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have Gallo against Trevor Story, I believe. And Story's the hometown guy.
And Gallo is on my fantasy team.
Yeah. Well, and Gallo is... If there was ever a time for Gallo to shine, it will be now. That's why I think I had Gallo and Alonso going in the finale.
Oh, yeah. And Alonso is also on my fantasy team. I
mean, Trevor Story, you know, he has a 466 home run, foot home run this year. So... And he's the hometown guy. Obviously, we saw that help Bryce Harper a lot 3 years ago. Matt Olson, Trey Mancini, who's the cancer survivor. It's a pretty good story. Sal Perez.
Also on my fantasy team.
Pete Alonso. Yeah. And Sal Perez, he's the guy, again, like, he could just end up being the Vladdy Jr. and just, you know, just crush them all. But I also, he's having a great season.
He is.
Now, could that affect him? I don't know. I went back and looked at the last five or six years since 2015. I looked at the winners and I looked at their first half, second half splits. just to see if there's anything to that. 2015, you remember who won?
2015?
Yeah.
No.
Todd Frazier.
Okay.
His first half, okay, is, and we're determining the halves at the All-Star break. So, technically, we're way past the halfway mark.
Well, I mean, not way past, but at least the Dodgers
have played
so.
91 sure. games. The Giants have played 89, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, we're past the official halfway mark, but I wouldn't necessarily way past,
okay,
a week past.
But I'm just looking at All-Star break as first and second half. Because that's what we all refer to as. That season, going into the All-Star break, 2015, Todd Frazier had a batting average of .284. Pretty good for Toddy. Slugging .585, okay, with an OPS of .922. The second half, he batted .220, slugging .390. Paltry with a OPS of .664. I mean, that is quite a big decline.
Yeah, that is definitely a big difference.
And he played... he played 15 fewer games, or I should say he started 15 fewer games in that second half. But again, I think that has a lot to do with the fact that there are just fewer games in that second half. But all things considered, pretty much the same. He went from 200 total bases in the first half to 108. Not quite half, but
pretty darn close.
Pretty darn close. So clearly, I mean, again, this isn't a direct correlation to playing in... I'm just taking the winners, okay? I didn't take all the participants, right. Okay? 2016, Giancarlo Stanton was batting .233 leading up to the Home Run Derby, and he finished the second half batting .254. So actually, he improved his batting average a little bit.
Right.
His OPS, though, did go down. He went from .823 to .800.
Which isn't a huge drop, and it's something that might have happened anyway just with the law of averages.
And he was hurt that second half because he only played 35 games.
That was going to be my next question was, didn't he get hurt in
and
that
could
second
it have
half?
Been from that, from the Derby? Huh? You know, if you're a fantasy player, yeah, you might be pretty pissed because he had 20 home runs in the first half, and then he only had 7 in the second. Again, he played, you know, about half as many games. Aaron Judge in 2017... was batting a nice, cool .329 going into the All-Star break. What do you do that second half?
Not .329.
How about 100 points less? 101 points. Wow. 228.
Wow.
That second half.
Yeah, that's 228. That's significant. And he was a rookie that year, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think for such a young player, then to be pulled out of routine and... you know, go for, you know, take a glorified batting practice session and just swing for the thing.
Nerves didn't get to him.
But then getting out of that mindset, you know, and just swinging for the fences the whole time might have affected it. I mean, like .329 to .228 is very significant. And if he was just going for the home run that second half of the season, you know, that's sort of the mental aspect of the game. You've got to, you know, what's your goal? Is it to put a good swing on the ball and make good solid contact? So, or is it just to hit a home run every single time?
Right. And I do believe he had a wrist injury or something after that, but he still played in 69 games after that.
Sure.
So, you know, it wasn't like it was just his wrist. I mean, he was still playing. You know?
It's not a tumor.
Well, anyway, he went from a 1.139 OPS to a .939. So his OPS was still pretty good afterwards. But, I mean, that batting average really suffered. Bryce Harper, 2018, he came into the All-Star break hitting .214. Finished the second half, or I should say in the second half, batted .300. Right on the money. So,
yeah.
And that was one where you could tell... he was pumped. I mean, that was like a very memorable home run derby, hometown kid. And it was his last, right? Because then he got traded. Like, they didn't think, nobody knew if he was going to get traded even that season. And then, of course, that offseason, it happened. He went to the Phils, right?
Right.
But, so that was kind of like his swan song, curtain call it what you will.
It was, look what you're going to be missing.
Kind yeah. He only hit, well, he played 93 games that first half, and he only played 62 games that second half. So his home run totals were cut in half the second half. But his batting average went up, and his strikeouts went down. So yeah. He did okay. It's you know, I'm not saying that there's any real correlation, but as a fantasy player, does give you a little pause. It gives sure. me a little pause, because sure. I heard Juan Soto got put in. And I was like, oh, yeah. No, don't put in Soto. Well, like, where's Vladdy?
You got one player. I have four players. Four players on my everyday starting fantasy lineup.
Who do you have?
Are in the thing. I got Chapman. I've got...
No, Chapman's not in it.
He's not?
No.
Did he bow out or something? I thought
I think he was supposed to be in it, right? No, but yeah. Now it's Matt Olson.
Okay.
Matt
Olson, so. That's, I guess that's why I was confused. I was saying Matt Chapman. Is that right, Matt? So, okay, so then only three. So I've got Perez, I've got Gallo, and I've got...
Polar Bear? Pete Alonso?
Yeah.
Wow.
Oddly enough, I'm not first in our league for home runs. Mm-hmm. I'm second, but I think that our leader has Otani.
Yeah, I would imagine. Now, I not to scare you, but Pete Alonso was batting 280 in 2019 going into the All-Star break, and the second half he batted 235.
Yeah, well, I'll have to keep an eye on that, but yeah.
His OPS went from 1006 to 0.863, which, again, I mean, an 863 OPS isn't horrible, but it's certainly not a 1,000, obviously. Anyway, I thought that'd be a little interesting. We'll see how it goes. I see Soto beating Otani first round. That's a hot take. That's it. I'm gonna finish right there. But all right. If you're in Vegas, take the National League, because they're doing AL or NL for Home Run Derby. Take the NL. Yeah, they're like, last I checked, they were like plus 400 or something like that. So
yeah.
Take them. And it's in, you know, Trevor Story could do it too. Who knows? All right. We're done with the All-Star game. All right. I mean, with the Home Run Derby All-Star game, Otani's going to pitch and lead off.
Yes, which I believe is the first time in Major League history that ever. That has happened. And he's also the very first Japanese national to be... well, in the Home Run Derby, for sure. But
oh, really? Matsui was never in the Derby?
I don't believe so. That's not what I read. It was that he is the first Japanese player, Japanese-born player to be in the Derby.
Yeah, sounds good. I mean, it would have been fun to have seen Ichiro in the Derby. But
yeah, he wasn't considered enough of a home run hitter to be invited.
But he was a home run. He was a secret home run.
Oh,
hitter.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. When he wanted to, he could hit a home run.
Yeah, exactly.
He was just happy with those singles and doubles.
So. Shohei Ohtani, man, if he doesn't get hurt, he'll be the first unanimous MVP, right? I mean, I can't imagine anybody else
even getting first-place votes. For this year? Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. I mean...
Vladdy is, you know, making it tough because he's still hitting like 360, and Ohtani's only hitting like 278 or something. But 278 nowadays, or 280, 275, 280, is above average and above good, even. I would say that's, especially when you're leading all of baseball in home runs.
Yeah.
And you're pitching every fifth day.
It's pretty amazing. The stat that I found, it's slightly old because I found this last month. So the numbers have changed slightly, but the effect, not so much. So Shohei Ohtani has logged the 2,523rd instance in Major League history of a 25 home run season. Of the previous 2,522 instances combined, generated 41 pitching strikeouts, 36 of which came from Babe Ruth. And he's already struck out 82 batters this season. Well, as of June, As of June, he had struck out 82 batters. So, quite impressive. These are definitely MVP numbers for quite the outstanding, unique, very fun player to watch.
Hoo-ah. He's on pace for 60 homers and 102 extra base hits.
Yeah, he's...
Who can you think of that has had a season of that many more home runs and extra base hits? I mean, I think you know one of them.
I think you know two of them. I had actually found a list of a lot of them. And in fact...
Well, there's only three guys.
Well, yeah, Barry Bonds, yeah. I don't know, is definitely one.
01 Barry.
Yeah.
21 Ruth.
Yeah.
And 01 Sammy Sosa. 01, man. That was a year for the Royals.
It was. That was the peak. That was the peak of the HGH era, for sure.
Yeah. So if you take those out, and, you know, I mean, I'm not saying you should. It's just Ruth and Ohtani.
Yeah.
But Ohtani's doing things Babe Ruth never did, so.
No, this is for sure. And possibly could not have even thought of. I mean, at a certain point, they figured out that Ruth was a much better hitter than he was a pitcher. He wasn't a bad pitcher, to say, but he was a much better hitter. So they stopped pitching him and just put him into hit, and it was absolutely fine.
Yeah.
It worked out.
Worked out pretty well for them. Will it work out the same for the Angels?
Well, it depends on how durable he lasts. I mean, we missed him, you know, for quite some time while he had his elbow repaired. So,
right. Well, and if, you know, the Angels can get some pitching and
some hitting around him, and maybe Mike Trout comes off of the DL here one of these days.
And they got rid of Mr. 6000.
Oh yeah, sure. AP.
This is Albert. What? This podcast is turning into Albert Watch now. He's just blowing by all these historical milestones. He's in a league of his own now.
He really is. He's a pretty impressive player to watch, and I think that he is very much enjoying being back in the National League.
6,000 total base club, which he got last Monday in Dodger Blue. Only three other guys in that club. Now, I was a little surprised by that. There's only three other guys in the 6,000 total base club. I figured there'd maybe be six or something.
There's not too many. I mean, 6,000 is a lot of hits. Yeah. You have to pay for a long time.
Well, and you have to be an all-around hitter. You can't just be a Reggie Jackson. You can't just even be a Barry Bonds. You have to hit them everywhere.
Yeah.
You got to play for a long time. Yeah. And you have to be consistent your entire career. Name one guy of those three. Well, now four with Mr. Pujols.
Of the 6,000 hit club,
yeah.
Oh, geez, I just right off the top of my head, the first names that come to mind would be someone like Hammer and Hank.
Hey now,
yes sir, Hank Aaron.
Willie Mays.
Bing, ding, ding.
Third
one's a little bit harder. He's you know, one of the greatest hitters of all time, but it might not be who you're thinking.
Right.
Wow, two out of three ain't bad though.
My next guess would be I want to say like Roger Maris, but I don't think he made, not Roger Maris. What am I thinking?
Rogers Hornsby.
Rogers Hornby, yeah, is that
no.
who it is?
No, it's no. not. It's not.
Okay, it would be Lou Gehrig.
Ah, if that, he had played that, longer, maybe.
But yeah.
No, it's Stan Musial.
Stan,
yeah, of Stan course. The man. Okay, yeah, but I mean, an elite club to say the least.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about that. This guy, you know, he's been there. I'd say the only knock against him is getting too old too quick.
But he's also like 3 years older than he's. Well, that is the
source of the knock. I mean, you know, it's like, yeah.
Or at least nobody knows how old he is. Yeah. I don't even think he knows how old he is.
And that's possible too. It's
pretty cool.
He's a hitter. I read something. I'm looking for it right now to find it exactly, but I'm not seeing it. But it's something like he became, back in May, he became the first player to hit for two different teams in the same metropolitan area in the same season.
That can't, is that true?
To hit a home run.
Oh, a home run.
A home run for the Angels and for the Dodgers in the same season.
Huh. Yeah, I guess that would be kind of rare. It doesn't seem like that would be the only time, but I guess it's possible.
That's why I was looking for that stat, but it's not showing up here.
Well, it's just great to see the Dodgers taking the scraps. Like, we got Justin Turner from the Mets, turned him into a damn near MVP player, all-star, to say the least. Getting Albert Pujols, we're turning back the clock.
Yeah, sure. It's taking one from Brian Sabian's book. Unfortunately, for the Dodgers, it's not good enough for first place in the West currently.
Now, we may have buried the lead a little bit because maybe I was putting it off a little bit. But who is the number one on the power rankings right now?
That's a fire question, bro.
That would be the San Francisco Giants. And it has been a lot of fun these last couple of months watching this team just blow past all sorts of expectations.
Hoo-ah. Can't really believe that. It's pretty incredible, actually.
They have the best record in the first half in the major leagues, and they have hit more home runs than anyone else in the, well, certainly National League. I think the major leagues.
Is that true?
Last thing that I remember hearing, they had hit their 135th home run as a team for the year. That was good enough, certainly when they hit it, to be the most in the National League. And I think it said the majors, but I can't confirm that.
132. The Blue Jays are 130. Dodgers are sitting at 123.
And it's truly amazing, given the drought of home runs that this team has had really since Barry Bonds last played for the team.
So what you're saying is the 2021 Giants are all juicing.
No more than the rest of the league, but no, is it finally the Giants?
Got it. You heard it here first.
Finally, the Giants have gotten some of those juiced baseballs that the rest of the league were using the last couple of years.
And is it the shoes?
I think it may also be the new dimensions of the Oracle Park.
Yeah, I don't know why they didn't change that the year after Barry retired or was unceremoniously retired.
No, Barry Bonds made that park look small. And
so you guys were under an illusion for the last like 20 years that anybody could do it, and just now realized, oh wait, yeah, we should probably change that.
I don't truly know what the resistance was, but I think it was just wanting to keep the original aesthetic. But I have still not been to the park to see those changes in person, so hoping to change that.
August 1st, baby. Yeah. We're going to go. And I did want to get some suggestions from the loyal listeners and fans out there for some good heckles. And maybe PG-13 heckles. That way we don't get removed from the park. But August 29th, 30th, and July 29th, 30th, and August 1st, Astros will be at Oracle Stadium, what the hell is it called?
It's Oracle Park.
AT&T Park.
Pac Bell Park.
And since I haven't been able to see them, I'm going to be there with bells on, quite literally. Got my little shame bell. I'm going to make a sign for the first time since I was 12 years old. You know, it's going to be great. But I would like to get some suggestions for some heckles. So let us know if what you got, what kind of heckles. I was thinking of, like goo goo gaga or something like that. Like every time
Altuve. Well, I mean, who's
something stupid. I just don't want to be up there.
We need to bring a trash can.
I don't
want to
get kicked out in the first inning, is what I'm saying. Okay. I hope they broke the mold when you were born. Something like, something. But the guy, there was a guy taunting Marwin Gonzalez.
In Oakland.
He's a,
right.
You're right, but he's on the Red Sox now, right. Of course. And he said something like, just because you're not in Houston doesn't mean you get off for free, you scumbag. Really yes. Good.
There is audio.
I can't get the audio enough.
Yeah, the audio does exist. We just can't get it to play right now.
Like Marwin Gonzalez is going to pinch hit.
Yeah, that's pretty distinct. That's really awesome. You gotta hand it to those fans in Oakland. They are very vocal when they want to be.
Yeah, it's great. I'd love to see it. And I hope the fans in SF are just as vocal. I hope they care about the game. Anybody that cares about the game, you don't have to be in the American League. You don't have to wear pants.
No, the worst part about it for all Giants fans, as far as I'm concerned, is that we can't no longer make fun of the Dodgers for losing to the Astros because it's like
it delegitimizes the loss.
It really does.
100%.
It really does, and that's the most irritating.
Fancy. How fancy.
I love it. Now, we just had a baseball holiday just pass, and that would be Bobby Bonilla Day.
Bobby Bonilla Day. Yes. Bobby Bonilla. What a negotiator this guy was.
Now, you were telling me that it's not just the Mets anymore.
It's not just the Mets. Apparently, since 2004. Bobby Bonilla has been getting another payout worth about $500,000 a year from the Baltimore Orioles.
That's incredible.
Yes, and this will be going for 25 years. So,
wow.
Yeah, so definitely for the next few years, he'll be getting an additional $500,000.
He's got a great agent.
I guess so.
You know, if you're trying to just buy a bunch of houses and a bunch of cars right off the bat, I guess that's not the way to go. But if you want to have
a long-lasting nice, wealth and a hell of a yearly allowance.
Yeah, that's the way to go. It's like when you win the lotto. Do you want the annuity or do you want the lump sum?
The annuity.
Take it. Because then you get it all that way, right?
Yeah, well, you get or certainly you more get of
the,
it.
Yeah, the post-tax.
Post-tax,
100%
yes.
of the taxed winnings.
Yes.
As opposed to tax on tax.
Right.
But that's pretty cool. Good for him.
Yes, absolutely good for him. Oh, and we had a big sexy sighting.
Really?
Yes, last night, our old friend Bartolo Colon, last month. Bartolo Colon, he tossed a complete game. Age 48, complete game
in
Mexico.
A seven-inning game?
No, this is in Mexico. So
they're playing real games.
I think they're playing real games.
Of course they are.
He is now in the Mexican leagues. He has 5 starts. This was as of last month, mid June. He was 3-1 with 3.56 ERA, and is leading his leading his team in wins, games started, complete games, innings pitched, HPP, WHIP, and strikeouts per walk. Keep going. Hoo-ah. He's doing great.
Is he a gear? What is he like? 48? He's 48.
48. I wish I could do that even now. I'm not 48.
Better hit the gym. You know, start ramping it up. If he can do it.
Working on strengthening my arm.
He's immortal, or he's made out of rubber. Maybe don't work out, because that guy doesn't look like he's worked out a day in his life.
His biggest workout is the donut from the plate to the mouth, I think.
Big it's, sexy. It's big
but,
sexy.
Yeah, keep doing what you're doing, Bartolo Colon, and
Now, is there such a thing as the curse of the no-hitter?
Yes, I've heard about this, and this is an interesting question. This is due to the few no hitters thrown this year, in which the team who threw the no hitter has fallen off a winning pace. We're looking at you, Arizona.
Well, you're absolutely right. According to Jason Stark of The Athletic, he's convinced. Now, let's just look at the Orioles. Okay. John Means throws a no-no against Seattle May 5th.
First time since 61, Jim Palmer.
For the O's.
Yeah.
Sounds about right. And then they lost the next 20 straight games on the road.
Unbelievable.
Which is only interesting because a couple weeks before that, your Diamondbacks, D-backs. Do we not call them Diamondbacks anymore?
I still call them Diamondbacks. It's
better than D-bags. Yeah. I don't know why they have that jersey.
I don't know.
Madison Bumgarner threw his little, you know, I'll do air quotes here. His little seven-inning no-no.
Yeah. Still should be considered a complete game because, hey, if you're going to limit the innings, if you go the entire time, that's a complete game.
Well, yeah, I guess, but it's not a complete game in the real sense. It's just,
it's not a complete game in the nine inning sense, but it's
still
a complete
game. Well, in our fantasy
game.
League, it counts, and much to my chagrin, because like my only complete games are like nine inning affairs. I think I might only have one. And that was Lance Lynn, which I was very proud of. But then all these seven-inning doubleheaders, these guys are just popping out complete games like nothing. Anyway, after that little no-no on April 25th, Diamondbacks went on a 24-game road losing streak, which no team has done before, or at least since the 1890 Pittsburgh Innocents, who lost 41 in a row on the road.
That's got to be rough.
And it also made for the first time that... two teams lost at least 20 in a row since 1894, when the Senators and the Louisville Colonels lost 21 and 20, respectively.
It's a long time ago.
So it basically has never happened. Intents and purposes, we just sort of say 1900.
Right.
It's a lot easier to wrap your head around. Now, is it possible to curse your team by losing to a no-hitter?
I imagine it would be.
Well, the Rangers lost to Musgrove and the Pirates April 9th. Then to Klubot on May 19th, upon which they immediately went out on the road and lost 10 straight.
Yeah.
Now, I know what you're thinking. What about the Cubs and the Dodgers? Okay. Well, the Cubs, after they made quick work of the Dodgers with a collective no-no, right? That was on June 24th.
Right.
The then first place Cubs went on to lose their next 11 in a row, finding themselves going from the top to 9 games back when it was all said and done. You'd have to go all the way back to 1925 to the Brooklyn Robins to find a team that lost more consecutive games after throwing a no-no. They lost 12.
Wow.
Now, this, of course, prompted the Dodgers to take a reverse course on the whole curse nonsense.
Right.
Because, you know, we don't believe in that.
They had been swooning up until then. They had been... June was a rough month until that... after that no-hitter was thrown.
I know that. You don't think I know that?
They spat!
Just reminding everyone.
They spat in the face of superstitious trolls and proceeded to win the next 9 straight, tying a record from Tug McGraw's 1969 Miracle Mets for longest winning streak in history by a team that had just been no-hit. So, is there a curse? Yes, there is a curse, unless you wear Dodger blue. Let that be a lesson to you, kids. Don't put on black and orange. Don't put on...
black and orange.
Orange and blue, or wherever the hell the Astros... Yeah. Don't put on red and black. I don't even know the other colors of the other teams. I don't even care.
That much is obvious.
All you need is Dodger blue, and you're orange good to black. Go. You're good to black. Go. You could say Candyman in the mirror. You could do Bloody Mary. You could do whatever you want.
Beetlejuice?
You're good. Yeah. Yeah. Just wear that Pantone 294, and you're good to go.
Speaking of of colors and Pantone 294, let me talk very briefly about the new City Connect jerseys. I don't know if the Dodgers version has been released yet. But
nope. And if I have anything to do, it'll never get released. I have seen the Giants one, though. Yeah. And it is hideous.
You know, It really is. I was able it's to
disturbing.
I was able to watch most of that series and be able to see that thing. Now, what's interesting about it, you know, they have this fog theme, and the concept is interesting, but it failed completely in execution. And I'll tell you what the worst part about it is and why it looks so completely hideous is because they messed with the color orange.
Yeah,
that
it's
orange
like bright.
Is not Giants orange. The rumor is they were trying to get the international orange, which is the same color as the Golden Gate Bridge, but they even failed in that because that color is nothing like the color
Golden Gate
of
Bridge
the bridge.
Is like rusty red.
Well, that's what it is, but it is technically the name of that color is international orange.
Got it.
But so I think they screwed up with the color, and also I think they screwed up with the placement of the G and the bridge logo. The bridge logo should have been what was on the chest, and that G should have been on the sleeve.
Yeah, exactly.
And it would have made a lot more sense. I do like the digits on the back, excepting the colors. I do like the fog theme and what they were going for, but I think they totally screwed up on the execution, and they just don't look good.
Well, I don't understand why they changed the font of the G. Why don't they just have that G, like that long skinny G that I see? Sometimes it's under the Gigantes logo. Sometimes it's just the G.
Their spring training.
Yeah.
Logo.
Why don't they just use that G? It's familiar.
You know, I think I would have preferred this to stick with just the SF.
Well,
I've not liked any Giants theme logos that was centered around the G. It's fine, I guess, but it's not. You know,
yeah, it's trashy.
You don't, yeah. So bad job, Nike, on the execution of the Giants City Connect uniform. You had an interesting idea, but you mucked it up.
Really bad. I still refuse to believe that the Dodgers are going to be wearing that.
But, yeah, well, hopefully, you know, they'll keep the right color and they won't, you know, give you like some sort of weird navy blue.
Horrific.
Why would they mess with a good thing? The Giants orange is an awesome color orange. Don't change it.
Well, I wouldn't go that far, but it does look weird. It does look very weird. It doesn't make any sense. Is it just a money grab or something?
I think it is a money grab more than anything else. But yeah, I just needed to get that off my chest.
Yeah, well, I was going to bring it up and I kind of forgot because it was just, you know, I was so, I almost feel bad bringing it up.
Well, but, you know, I was only reminded of it because you mentioned the color blue. So, you know, that's what prompted it for me. But
now we have a looking to the second half segment here. I mean, you know, look at some pitchers. Maybe that should be on your radar for fantasy purposes. And that kind of brings us to a new segment that I believe we started last time called Know Your Stat. Now, we were talking about war, I believe,
right,
last time.
Yes.
No, I don't have a DRA-themed song.
It's okay. This one works.
Still DRE. We could do that from the Chronic. DRA, Deserved Run Average.
Deserved run average.
Yeah, now this is a stat that Baseball Prospectus has been using for a while. It's it builds off of an ERA sort of nine inning theme,
sure,
kind of thing. If Voros McCracken's DIPS theory dips, Tom Tango's fielding independent pitching, and Colin Wire's fair run average. The goal of DRA is to present a value on the common runs allowed per nine inning scale that more accurately describes the pitcher's effect on run prevention. Because, you know, ERA is good, but, you know, for the same reasons why we have FIP and the other ones I was just saying, you know, it doesn't exactly show, you know, the true potential, or, you know, it doesn't rule out bad luck or bad defending
right
on a team. And so DRA sort of gives you a more accurate idea of how the pitcher is doing. What it essentially accomplishes is a way to credit or debit a pitcher for every pitching event, from strikeouts to home runs.
So like the reliever who comes in with a runner on third and second and one out and gives up the hit, but those runs are charged to the previous pitcher who put those batters on base.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So he's still responsible, but yeah, it takes into account stuff like that. You know, an average value is placed on each event, essentially. And then each event is adjusted for contact factors like opposing hitter's park, temperature, pitch framing effects. I mean, there's so much more. For instance, a pitcher is more likely to give up a home run on the road to Aaron Judge than they are to give up a home run against, like, Billy Hamilton or something like that, you know. After the model makes these adjustments and factors in a few base-stealing effects, DRA is calculated. So since DRA is based on an ERA-like scale, you know, taking into account average nine-inning game, you can look at some pitchers who may have been the victims of bad luck in the first half of the season. You know, and I know there's a lot of fantasy players out there who are desperate right now for starting pitching. You know, we have a guy in our league who's trying to make trades with everybody and succeeding too. And he was asking me, you know, he needs some. He has the opposite of a quality start. It's like every pitcher he has goes less than six and gives up six. Kind of thing, you know? And so it's tough. And you know, because we don't do wins in our league, we do quality starts, it makes it even tougher, right? But you could still have a productive pitcher who's on a good team, you know, because wins aren't a great way to look at a pitcher, obviously.
It is a way.
But it is a way because it's also a way to look at the team, and sometimes that helps. Now, a guy like, you know, obviously DeGrom, he's just going to give you elite stats regardless. And if you do wins and losses, it might not be as good, but he's still got that you want. Now, that's an obvious one. We're just going to do a little some pitchers to look for in the second half, especially in this time, especially if you're like in a 12-team league or less, you know. I mean, 15-team leagues, I have like one guy maybe. We'll see here. And just as a note, some of these pitchers aren't currently starters right now, and some of them aren't even in the majors, but with some roster tweaking, role changes, you know, might be worth a look. Merrill Kelly, who, you know, with the Diamondbacks. Now, he actually pitched yesterday against the Dodgers, but that notwithstanding. From the beginning of the season to June 16th, he had an ERA of 5.4 with two wins. But in the four starts after that, he averaged over six innings per start and posted 2.13 ERA and a sub-1 whip with three wins. So that's a guy. I mean, obviously, he's on the Diamondbacks, so wins might not be the best, but he obviously has proven that he can keep the team in games.
Right.
He's getting stretched out a lot longer, quality starts, in that sense.
A lot of times, just keeping your team in the game is all that you can really, truly ask for.
Yeah. And his ERA was 4.60, but his DRA was 4.00. So again, not like a stellar guy, but if you just need like an extra quality starts guy, even maybe a spot win if you play the matchups, not bad. Keep an eye on him. We got Alec Mills from the Cubs, you know, coming off of the year when he threw a no-no. You know, it seemed a bit odd that, you know, Alec Mills didn't even make the starting rotation this season. But after a few injuries to the Cubs starters, he's back. You know, he's been a reliever and a starter, but in the games that he started, he's pitched to a tune of 3.65 ERA and a 25-6 K to walk rate in 24 innings. So, you know, he's no ace, but there could be some flashes of greatness, and we've seen flashes of greatness with him, obviously last summer when he threw that no-no. So his ERA is 4.84 right now, because again, like relief and starts, but his DRA is 4.40. Again, not stellar, but if we see it continuing to lower, might not be a, and he's only owned in like 30% of leagues right now, so. We got Eric Fetty, the Nationals. Now, he did start yesterday, right, against the Giants. And the Giants did win, but it was a low-scoring game. I actually didn't. I should have updated that. But
it was. I believe they only scored three runs against him.
Yeah, and he's earned his spot in the middle of that rotation right now with Washington.
Yeah.
And
I think he performed performed really good last month when the Giants were in Washington.
Yeah, he had a 3-start scoreless streak before he got rocked in his last two outings at Philly and San Diego. But, you know, Slam Diego, they're getting to everybody at some point. So,
yeah,
you know, he's only averaging like 5 innings per start right now. So quality starts maybe aren't immediately going to get a nice return. But, man, I mean, if you start him in parks with low home run averages and he's, you know, was able to quell the Giants to only a few runs, you know, obviously the number one team in baseball right now in their home park, it's pretty good. Going off on a little bit more of a stretch, Jose Quintana, you know, with the Angels.
Sure.
His ERA right now is 6.92. But his DRA is 4.16. So, you know, usually when you see a, I mean, that's like almost 3 points right there. That, like, that's right. Insane. Generally, whenever you see an ERA-DRA split like that, you jump on that guy because you know something that, you know, the traditional stats don't. When you look at something like that, you know.
Right.
In this case, though, I don't know. Spending most of his June on the IL, you know, he's returned to finding a starting job. It's gone now. He's basically like a relief-only guy. But Madden hasn't completely ruled him out from joining the rotation.
Well, as soon as he needs someone to come in for a spot start, he'll probably be top of the list to come in that day.
Yeah, and before his IL start stint, he had 50 strikeouts in 33 2/3 innings.
Yeah, which is very good ratio.
Yeah, his his walk rate, however, might be the rub. But
what was his whip? Do you have that?
Well, he had a 26 bases on balls in that span while wearing a 7.22 ERA. But since his return, he's gone out at least one inning each of his appearances to an 8-1 strikeout to a walk rate, and this could be a bit of a pie in the sky, but. You know, and another, okay, this is the last one, ERA of Mitch Keller right now with the Pirates. He's got an ERA of 7.04. That's like Matt Harvey territory. That's pretty bad. But his DRA is 5.07. Now, again, I mean, 5.07 isn't, you know, you shouldn't go running at that. But, again, that's like almost a 2-point split right there, which is just showing he's got a lot of bad luck. The Pirates haven't been that good. They've been getting a little bit better as of late. He's not even in the majors right now, but given his 24% strikeout rate when he was a major leaguer and the fact that he's currently posting a 1.84 ERA with a 1.02 whip at AAA.
They may be called back up here,
I think,
pretty
soon. Yeah.
Or could he be trade bait?
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I was just going to say. If you see him get traded, especially to a contender, oh, man.
Yeah.
He could be a quiet ace. All right, so there you go, Meat Hammer. That's the guy.
Pick him up.
My boy, Paolo. There you go. All right, I did a little homework for you, okay? I don't think I could give you anybody on my team right now because I'm struggling right now in second place, and it's been kind of tough, man. I led for a couple months there in the lead. I got within like 4 points and of first again, but now I dropped a couple.
Yeah, I was able to crawl my way out of the cellar. Last we talked, I was sitting dead last, and now I'm in a very comfortable fifth spot. I even actually was stuck my way up into third place there for a hot minute.
You see that? You listen to the show, you're going to do a lot better.
Man, that's the point of the show, right?
Hey,
I do want to get into Bill James, but... before we forget, that brings us to this week's
Ignoble Award of the Week.
Well, we have, since our last broadcast, we've had many, many possible contenders come across. I wasn't able to find all of them going back, but, the first one we considered was the fact that... former Dodger great Eric Gagne was charged in a highway hit and run from last July up in Quebec. But as a possibility for ignoble, is certainly ignoble behavior. No, we are going to go with our favorite guy to pick on, at least one of them. Former Astros manager, AJ Hinch.
shame.
Last week he was asked a question in some sort of press conference setting. That 2020 was hard for me. I know why I wasn't in the game. I didn't deserve to be in the game. It was wrong what went on in Houston. I am embarrassed to talk about it. It is shameful, but it is my reality.
Get out. Nobody cares. Nobody cares. Get out of here.
Really, quit your whining. You still don't deserve to be in the game.
What a goon. And
you should consider yourself lucky that you do have a job in this
game. Oh, my God. He's the luckiest man in baseball. Oh, besides Correa, Altuve, Bregman.
All those guys.
Well, you know what Hank Aaron said about the Astros, of course. Right?
I think whoever did that should be out of baseball the rest of their life.
Yeah.
I totally
agree.
100%.
And on a related note, Sir Charles Barkley, basketball great.
Golfer extraordinaire.
Golfer extraordinaire. He was, in this instance, was of course returning to the sticky substance scandal, but Charles Barkley said, "I want to give a shout out to MLB. I saw your new thing where if you catch pitchers cheating, you're going to suspend them for 10 days with pay. Way to stick it to those cheaters. That's some harsh damn punishment."
Uh-oh. This is going to open a whole other can of worms here. Yeah. It's okay.
Yeah. So
cheaters.
Cheaters.
We had cheaters. Cheating. We've had cheaters.
Yes.
And AJ Hinch and Alex Cora and Beltran.
Cheaters.
Yeah. All ringleading those cheaters. Using rosin and sweat on a baseball? That's not cheating.
That's something that's been going on since the beginning.
If they give it to you,
in the beginning,
it's not cheating. You can say no foreign substance, but then give them a foreign substance. You know, what are you supposed to do? It's like
put
a steak in a dog's food bowl and say, don't eat that. Like, what? I mean, you know, it doesn't make any sense. I don't get it. But anyway.
No. Are pitchers going to be checked at the All-Star game?
That's a good question. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think so.
It's an exhibition. It doesn't really count. Right.
Yeah. That's interesting, though. Is Garrett Cole pitching?
I don't know.
I don't think he is, no. I thought you were going to give the ignoble award to Correa and Altuve, saying that they're not playing for personal reasons. It's like, yeah, we know why you're not playing, bro. You don't want to get booed on a national stage.
Hard.
The stones on these guys. Can you believe this? Just say it. Yeah. Yeah, we don't want to go because we don't want to get booed. You know, just admit it. You suck. Yeah. Everybody hates you. You're the worst. And by the way, Altuve should be in. Like, it's crazy that he's not. You know, I don't know how he's doing it this year. I don't want to know.
A heck of a year.
But if you're not going to go to the All-Star game, you're
a turd.
Yeah, you're a turd.
Bigger turd than we already knew that you were. Thank you, Mick.
All right. Okay. Now, I saw Bill James, who, and by the way, we're going to start a petition for Bill James for commissioner of baseball pretty soon. Now, I don't agree with everything he says, and I know not everybody else does either, but
that's not the point.
It can't be worse than what we got now.
No, definitely not. It'll be a major improvement. I mean, this guy currently, he's getting booed when he steps on stage,
no matter the conflict.
Yeah.
Right.
He goes, stepped up at the podium for the draft last night, got booed. So yeah, Bill James for commish. We're starting that right here, right now.
Exactly. Bill James literally wrote the book on the analytics that every team uses to this day.
Yes, literally.
You know, and may be responsible, it's argued, to the slow pace and the more, you know, I'm doing air quotes again, boring pace of play that baseball has turned into because pitchers are really good now. Because batters know a lot more about what happens after they swing the bat now. So they're all trying to hit it higher. They know a higher launch angle is going to make the ball go farther and going to have a higher chance of hitting an extra base hit or a home run. Now, you know, the shifts and the advanced statistics maybe aren't necessarily a recipe for an exciting game, but you can't blame the teams for trying to learn as much as they possibly can about themselves and also the other team.
The information is there to be had.
Right.
Better go get it. Information,
exactly.
Knowledge is power.
And you'd be a bad coach if you didn't look at this stuff.
Yeah.
So gone are the days of basically almost all of those coaches, except for the manager of the White Sox and, you know, maybe to a lesser extent. Although I think Tito, you know, with the Indian, I think he does still look at a lot of these things, and I know he listens to his players a lot.
I think they look at it, how much they adhere to what those numbers are telling them. Very from manager to manager.
Right. But
some might.
La Russa is on. Let's if we're making a scale, La Russa on one end, and. I don't know. Maybe
this is a scale of
Gabe Kapler on the other.
Ultra old school to ultra new school.
Right. And it seems to be working for the Giants. I mean, I think the Giants have more managers or more coaches than any team in baseball.
They have a lot of coaches.
Yeah.
They have a really big coaching
staff.
37
coaches or something like that.
Yeah.
Something crazy. I was just looking at that the other day. And
only 20 of them are allowed in during game days, though.
Yeah, that makes sense. But anyway, Bill James, who again, love him or accept him and not like him, he's the guy is still on the cutting edge of baseball and baseball opinion. But anyway, I saw him on with Brian Kenny, I believe, who again is another big stats guy,
right?
And they were talking about potential rule changes that we've talked about previously on this show, like, you know, that they're doing in single A right now, or double A. Is it single A or double A? I don't know. Bringing the mound back a foot or something obscene like that. Making the base pads, I don't know, you know, all kinds of wacky rules, right? Robo umps and all that. So he had some notable rules that he proposed. Now he even admitted, he's like, I don't necessarily want any of these as rules, but if you were to ask me, this is where I would start, essentially, you know? So let's look at some ways to limit pitching changes, right? He says he has 4 points here to limit pitching changes. Number one, limit teams to 3 pitchers in the first 9 innings. Okay, now that's a little extreme, but we've definitely seen that before, you know, or we've heard people talk about that. He also has limit team to 11 pitchers on roster. Now that's probably not going to go. That's not going to fly. Although it would go to make, you know, managers use their pitches a lot longer. It would force them to, essentially.
It would, that not having that one or two extra pitchers.
But that could get ugly pretty fast. He also has limit number of pitchers who can be used in series. Now, that's interesting, you know, because you got to make a decision ahead of time kind of thing.
Yeah.
You look at their roster, you know, and that gives the managers a little extra managing, because a lot of the new rules that we have are taking away the management responsibilities, and I don't like that at all. So in a sense, this would actually increase the responsibility, which would be interesting. I don't know if it's good, but it's you can't look at that and immediately think, oh, that's stupid, you know. And anyway, and then he also has prohibit any pitcher from pitching in consecutive games.
Now that last one, I think, is interesting, because that could play into sort of some of these what is it called, the weighted use kind of thing to stretch guys out, have longer rest periods that they would otherwise get, so that there's less potential for them to get hurt overall. And of this group, that's the one that makes the most sense to me, that would be favorable to all parties involved.
But what about, like, Max Scherzer pitching the night before coming in relief in the World Series, or Madison Bumgarner, you know? We're not going to see any very dramatic moments like that. I mean, I know this rule is mainly
for relief pitchers.
But.
I think this geared for relief pitchers, but I think I would be okay with, you know, having something like this.
Out of those four, that's the one you think?
Well, no, but I think for the regular season.
Yeah.
Okay. I think the postseason, you're dealing with a whole different animal.
Yeah, that's true.
So this I don't know that it would be wise to have a rule like this in the postseason because it is so all or nothing by its very nature. I think it makes much more sense for a regular season, the marathon of 162 games, to get to that postseason. And then if you have a guy like a Scherzer or a Bumgarner who can and is willing to, and it's the seventh game of the World Series, not going to be playing the next day, regardless of what happens.
Randy Johnson.
I think October... October is a whole different animal, and I wouldn't agree to that rule for that. But for the regular season,
yeah, it's not like, again, like these are like when I hear him talk about it, it's hard to hate because he has very detailed reasons for all these.
For
things.
Sure, he's.
But it's also just trying to mitigate the knee jerk reaction rules that MLB puts on to, you know, enforce certain things or to try to promote a game that they want to see, but then they always almost always step on their own feet and they can't get out of their own way, right? With trying to limit time of games, pace of play, but then they institute the replay. And sometimes those take 6 minutes.
Yeah.
And they don't always get it right.
Not that
I'm saying they shouldn't have it, but don't complain about one thing and then do something counterintuitive.
No, for sure. And you said a very important word in there, the word enforce. There's some rules that are already in place that just need to be enforced.
That's true.
And would drastically improve pace of play.
Okay, and that's actually good because it brings me to his second rules regarding the batter's box. And this is something that, like you were just saying, okay... Well, the first one he was saying is the move the batter's box 1 inch away from the plate. That's interesting.
I think this is good. I think if we're gonna have, you know, if players want to get as close as possible to the plate, it makes sense to be able to cover the outside and the inside. But then the pitchers have no way to alter their target area without risking hitting the batter because they're right up onto the plate. It's you know, that old brushback pitch that now will cause a bench clearing incident in the days that it, you know, back in the days of, you know, of old, I suppose, the breastbash pitch was expected, especially after a home run.
I was thinking more it would give the pitcher the true outside strikeout.
Nowadays
the guys are so good and bat speeds are so fast that they can always just flick the bat out and cover that outside because they're hovering over the plate. But also, like what you're saying, guys that are crowding the plate, the Anthony Rizzos, the Craig Biggios of the world, that would also make that a lot easier, or to pitch inside and to pitch inside without worry as well.
Yeah, well, without worry, but yeah, it would give them more opportunity to be able to throw inside,
right?
With less worry, but you know, more opportunity to actually make that pitch.
And then it also goes it brings up a great point, which is actually his next rule, because guys now versus guys 50 years ago or even 30 years ago, whatever equipment a batter wears into the batter's box, he is worn until he returns to the dugout. So that means on the base pads, everywhere.
I've never heard of this one. It's great.
It's the first time I heard this, and I kind of like it.
Yeah.
Because like you're saying, guys are crowding the plate. They have all this armor all over them because, of course, they're not afraid of the ball unless it runs their
face. Yeah, okay. But
a lot of those guys even have the half face cover now.
Yeah.
The Stanton made popular. Now, like, I swear, like, half the guys have that now that I see. Not to say that they want to get hit in the head, but there's so much less fear now in the box. Pitchers have so much less intimidation factors when they can't pitch inside or outside anymore. Yeah. This would go a long way, I think. You know, I think you were saying earlier, like, maybe they wear, like, a soccer-style shin guard, you know, that goes under the...
If they want to wear a shin guard, wear soccer-style. It'll protect your shin at least a little bit, and it won't interfere with your movement out on the base paths.
I kind of like it, man. It seems... So, you know, you got to keep your batting gloves. The bat boy isn't going to come and take them for you, and he's not going to give you your little oven mitt so you can safely slide. You know, no, if you want to wear all this gear... You got to carry it with you. I like it, man. It's a crazy rule, and I've never heard it, but it's not a rule that is so crazy that it wouldn't make any sense. It makes perfect sense. That's a huge advantage for the pitcher.
For the batter.
And the third, for the batter, sorry. And the third rule would be something that you were just saying, which is enforce the rule that's already on the books requiring batter to stay in the batter's box.
Yeah, no, this one goes directly to the pace of play, which is
100%.
What baseball has been trying to change. Guys sitting out the Nomar Garcia Parras, pandas of the world get out and they do a little routine or they fix
they all do it now
thing.
they all do it.
Every single one of them. And it's when I was
the Soto shuffle, you know. Yeah,
when I was playing, you know, certainly in Little League and in high school, the rule was if you needed a minute between pitches, you could step out of the box with one foot to indicate I'm not quite ready yet, and then when you're ready, step back in with that foot and you go. If you wanted to step completely out of the box, you had to ask for time and wait for time to be granted.
And none of this mid windup BS where you see a lot of these pitchers in the stretch about to go, and then they're, you know, and you see the look of exasperation on their face when the ump actually grants the time. And the pitcher should be mad because that's extremely disruptful.
And not to mention dangerous, as a local announcer for the Giants, Mike Kruko, has pointed out many times. The stop in the middle of a windup pitch is a good way to get hurt out on the mound.
Oh, yeah.
You know, a lot of times this happens, the player backs out and time isn't granted, but it's assumed that it is, so it is.
Yeah. And in a day when MLB is starting to enforce a rule that's already on the books, the pitcher rule, right? No foreign substance, which isn't a new rule. It's been on the rule since, you know, time immemorial.
Yeah.
So has the batter box rule. Yeah. So why aren't they crying foul about that? And that would go a long way to help them fulfill their goal of pace of play, much more so than the pitchers, you know. That's more action. They want more action, but that's a different thing than pace of play. Pace of play, pitchers, you know, in 40, they have the 30-second clock, right? Make it a 15-second if you really want to get crazy about it. But so to sort of sum it all up, you know, the three changes that Bill James said must happen. Number one, stop batters from stepping out between pitches.
Yeah.
That's exactly what we
So
the
rule's already there, just enforce it.
The second one is interesting. Limit mid-inning pitching changes.
Now this, I think, this is the idea about the minimum three batter rule. To do exactly this, to limit those mid-inning changes.
It's gone kind of a long way in helping that to an extent. And I find myself not hating it as much as I thought I was going to.
Yeah, no, because ultimately the situation doesn't come up that often.
Or when it does, you know, half the time it's against you, but half the time you're like, great, he didn't get the guy he was supposed to get out. Now he has to face Justin Turner. Lefty has to face, like, that's great news, you know? Yeah. Something like that, like when you're watching your batters up there. It's kind of nice.
Sure,
you know,
and
he can't get out of it.
And also then maybe that pitcher then does get Harper out, and hey, that's great too. Good job.
That's old-fashioned baseball.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's the way it's supposed to be played. Get in there and face the guy in the box.
Wow. I'm going to give myself a pat on the back. I'm evolving.
All right.
Who knew?
All right.
I don't think this day would ever come.
Change is possible.
Who knew? Wow. I haven't really actually said it out loud, but I find myself not hating that rule. And his third rule, and this is interesting, limit throws to first base. That's interesting.
It would be interesting. I'm not
I don't know where sure I'm at on
about
that one.
This.
Yeah,
I don't know either because yes, I get it. It's annoying when a pitcher like throws over to first base like three times in a row. And it's totally understandable why he did that, because you don't want to give up that 90 feet.
Right.
You want to change your timing as a pitcher so the runner doesn't quite know when to go. I get that.
It's your prerogative as a pitcher.
But it is your prerogative. And you know what? I don't know that this really needs to be a thing, because ultimately the fans will let them know. I mean, you get a guy who throws over to first base two, three times in a row, the fans in the stands always start
to
boo. No,
not if it's the home pitcher, though.
Oh, well.
Almost never do they get booed. And rightfully so. And when the opposing pitcher's up, he throws over once, you boo the hell out of him, you know?
Well, maybe not once, twice, yes.
Okay, so he didn't give an exact count, you know, on this idea, but to limit it. But I'm assuming maybe three
per at bat,
maybe even two. I don't know, but that's going to give the runner a huge advantage.
Well,
especially when he throws over the max amount, and you're like, I'm going, baby,
exactly. Yeah. And that's like,
but maybe that's more fun. Maybe that's
maybe that's
stolen base back.
Maybe that's when you throw the pitch out.
Yeah, but then you still got to go 66 to. You know, another thrown to second. I don't know. The runner still has the advantage.
Runner still has the advantage. But if you're anticipating him go, you throw that pitch out, and the catcher's already in position to throw, and that cuts down on the time.
That's
I'm
getting excited just thinking about it.
All right.
I don't hate this rule. What's going on? The show is making me a sensitive.
Bill James for commish.
Bill James for commish. You heard it here first.
The campaign is starting now.
We're going to start that. I'm starting it. I think we're going to get him up there. Why not Bill James? That'd be fun.
I can't think of a reason. Yeah.
The guy loves baseball.
Guy loves baseball. He thinks a lot about baseball.
Yeah.
He thinks a lot about ways baseball can be better. He's incredibly knowledgeable and well spoken. Maybe a little bit boring, but who cares? He's a commissioner.
Yeah. Who else is gonna be? Bob Costas, you know? Maybe Billy Crystal. But then he's just gonna give the Yankees all the breaks, so I don't know about that.
Or the Mets.
Yeah. That's only in City Slickers. I think because they couldn't get the rights to the Yankees.
Maybe.
I always wondered about that, but are we gonna get into last week's trivia question, or do you want to hit me with one more thing here?
Yeah, I think we've touched on everything we can get into the
last week's trivia question. And please remember to email us baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com. Give us your good Astros heckle suggestions, and if you're going to be in the Bay Area the end of July, early August, go to that game.
Yeah.
Give them hell.
If you want, even if you can send us an audio recording, maybe we can even put it up to a vote and play some of these out loud.
I'll do it. I'll say whatever you want me to say. I'm going to get on TV for sure. I don't care. No, I don't want to be on TV. I just want them to hear every damn word I say. Watch.
Well, we need to be sure that we get our seats close to the broadcast mics.
I'm
going to
be right there. Oh yeah, I'm more concerned about the Astros players hearing us than ESPN necessarily.
Well.
But anyway, baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com. Last week's trivia question: which team did Jay Bruce hit a walk-off homer against to clinch the NL Central for the Reds in 2010? Do you remember this one? It was yours, actually.
I do remember. I just it's been so long. It just impressed me again how good of a question that was. Did we get?
Well,
it's been a while. Did we get any responses?
Yeah, I was gonna say, for the first time ever on this show, every single response was correct.
Really?
Everybody, of course. Yeah, everybody got this right. I don't know why. I guess it was too easy. I don't know.
Too easy.
I thought it was good. I didn't know it off the top of my head. No. But we'll give a little shout out to the first three responders here. We got Neil in Petaluma, Jeremy in Scottsdale, and Mallory B in Montecito. And Mallory B actually, she said, as a lifelong Red Leg fan, I have a lot of Jay Bruce memories, including 2 years after when he actually hit another home run that would prove to be the winning run to clinch the NL Central. But 2010 is the one that I'll never forget.
Nice.
Yes, the answer is the Astros. Now, I think we thought this would be a bit of a trick question because we're talking about the NL Central. You know,
right.
We're talking about National League in a sense, although they, you know, they weren't. But anyway, yeah, Astros. Everybody got it. Ding. Yeah,
that's great.
Ding. Ding. Now, hopefully we can get a slightly more difficult question, but maybe it's good. Maybe the easy ones are good. I don't know. Or we have a lot of Reds fans out there. Who knew?
Yeah. Well, hey, they exist.
Jay Bruce had a lot. He had a lot of great Reds memories. Maybe that's why it was so easy, because if you're a Reds fan, you think of Jay Bruce.
Yeah, that's maybe
you
so.
You have like four or five examples right off the top of your head. But
yeah.
What you got for me this week?
Well, this week I got something I'll admit is a little bit East Coast, but it is still fun, especially if you know any Red Sox fans out there. But
unfortunately, I think we all do.
Yeah, I think that the Red Sox Nation is very, very vocal. So if you don't know any Red Sox fans, consider yourself lucky.
Sassy.
Earlier this year, June 6th, 2021, the Red Sox won their 1,000th game against the New York Yankees. They were the first franchise to accomplish this.
Real.
Incidentally, the Yankees also were the first team to win 1,000 against the Red Sox.
Makes sense.
So the question is, when did this happen? When did the New York Yankees win their 1,000th against the Red Sox?
What
all
year?
Time?
What
year? Bonus points if you know the date.
Wow. We've got to have some pretty hardcore Yankees fans here.
Yeah.
Or Red Sox fans.
Or Red Sox.
I should say.
But you know, I mean, baseball... baseball is diverse, and we may have some Yankees and Red Sox fans and our listening audience. So we'll find out here.
Yeah, let us know. You can email us baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com. Leave the answer in the Podomatic website or Twitter @WestCoastBiasBB. On that note, the sun is coming out. We got to get out of here. It's going to get hot as hell. Watch some Derby. Enjoy the All-Star Week. From San Francisco, California, I am Adam Nelson.
I am Samuel Paul. Remember, baseball is life. The rest, just details.
Go watch some baseball.
All-Star game, baby.